You're listening to Scion Radio. It's Andrew David. Now on a Tuesday, I open up my little laptop and press several buttons because it's time for us to make that connection which draws this country all the way across to the sun-filled loveliness, the uplands of Woodland Hills, where we should find Bruce K. Rosenbloom in the man cave. Are you there, Bruce?
Bruce is in the man cave. He's bundled up. It's cold. As a matter of fact, I think it's colder here than it is where you are.
Well, we are looking at 55 or so, 55 Fahrenheit. We are recording this at 2:15 on Tuesday the 16th in the afternoon. It's 2:15 in the UK. It'll be about 6:15 with you, I should think, sometime, something like that. So what's your temperature? Can you press any buttons and see whether AccuWeather?
Tell me what yours is again?
Ours is just over 10, so that makes it 50, 51, 52.
And we are at 36 degrees right now. So it looks like Lincoln is the vacation spot of the world where it's nice and when people will want to go. They're going to be leaving California to go there.
We have sunshine, well, intermittent. We've got daffodils in the garden. We've got some hyacinths coming up. The buds are budding. The spring is springing. The only thing we haven't actually got on our walks are any lambs. We've got sheep in the fields, which look like they're ready to lamb, but we haven't got any spring lambs yet. So something more to look forward to. How are you? How are things? How's it going? We're going to finish. Not a spoiler alert, but we promise this. We're going to finish today's session talking about the lunch you rushed off to last week with Lee.
We could actually start off with that if you'd like.
Okay.
It's actually a very interesting lunch. It was a very good lunch. He opened up about things that, you know, he told me that he's never talked about with anybody. And he says, you know, we really have a special friendship. He says, I don't open up and tell people these kinds of things ever, and I'm telling you all about my experiences. He says, you asked me not to talk about racism all the time and to focus on the career that I had. Mm-hmm. And he said, I get that. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, I've never talked to anybody about this stuff, so I'm opening up to you. And he told me a lot of things that happened to him along the way that, you know, kind of, you know, opened my mind a little bit more. And I said, okay, you know, I won't be so hard on you when you start talking about what you went through. I said, but you have to do me a favor. You have to do me a favor, and you have to find a way to turn that negative into a positive. And the current manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers is African American. Actually, he's an African American with part Asian in him. So he's fighting two battles right now. He's fighting the equal justice battle, and he's also fighting the anti Asian wave that's happening in this country with, you know, Asian people are getting attacked brutally because of the Trump's language regarding the China virus. So people are blaming anybody Chinese or of Asian descent in this country for the cause of the virus. So I said, why don't you reach out to Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers, and put your experience to work and help him, you know, put out, you know, so a positive message and turn what happened to you into something good. Because, you know, he said, well, I could have played more and I could have had a better career and I could have done this and that. And I said, well, but that's all in the past, Lee. Mm-hmm. And despite the fact that you feel that you were cheated, and I think most athletes would always want more time, I said, you had a 16, 17 year career playing professional baseball and I said, Lee, you had, you know, probably 2,000 more at bats in professional baseball than I ever had. And that was one thing I always wanted to be, was a professional baseball player. So, you know, you have to kind of, you know, you can't just, you know, dwell on negative stuff. You have to look at the big picture and you have to understand that you had a great career and you did some things and you set some records and you played in World Series and but he told me just some of the struggles that he had coming up and the way he was treated. And he told me how some of his friends who were African American players in the minor leagues and on the Dodgers when he got up to the major leagues, and the stories they had about, you know, how they were treated and it was different and it was, you know, second class compared to most. But I told him, I said, but Lee, you have to understand the history of baseball. Baseball was invented during the Civil War and it was played by white men. And throughout the years when baseball became professionalized, you know, owners were white men. A lot of the players came out of the fields of the South. They were rednecks, and they came out of the South where feelings about racism aren't the same at all as in some of the other parts of the country. And that's what baseball was all about. It was very racist. It was very redneck for many, many years. And even up until Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball in 1947, I said Jackie Robinson was still fighting that fight until the day he died. And it probably put him in an early grave. He died a young man, but you know, the toll that it took on him to fight that fight was something. I said, Lee, the fact that you made it and you played so long would have made Jackie Robinson very proud. And he told me that he did have a chance to meet Jackie Robinson at a Dodgers spring training early in his career. And Jackie took a liking to him. And I said, well, isn't that what it's really all about? That's really what should make you most proud is that this gentleman who fought the good fight and created huge change to the national pastime was a friend of yours and channel that energy and channel that positiveness. And so he told me that he would, and then I got a really nice note from him following, and he sent me a text saying that he really enjoyed it and he's looking forward to doing it again, and that made me feel really good. And we'll have more discussions along these lines, you know.
Yeah. Particularly the fact that he said that he doesn't open up to many people, but he felt confident in being able to open up to you. That's a terrific compliment. So a terrific thing to take forward. Where are we? We've got some other good news to talk about later on in the program with our royal family. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Other things to talk about. We are having a little bit of pullback or whatever on the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which is rolling out big time in the UK. But across Europe, because of some issues with a few people who've had unusual blood clots, quite a few countries, including places like Germany, France and Italy, and Italy now into their third lockdown, have decided to suspend the use of the Oxford AstraZeneca. As I say, we're recording this at 2:20 on Tuesday, March the 16th. Things may have changed when you actually get to listen to this, but they are waiting for some reports from health authorities and various clever people in Europe and the UK. Do you have any problems with the Oxford AstraZeneca, or are you using the other ones?
Well, as far as I know, if AstraZeneca is being used in this country, it's few and far between, if at all. Pfizer is still the big one, followed by Moderna. Those are the two big ones that most everybody is getting. But now, actually right down the street from where we are, at one of the local community colleges, Pierce Community College, the two-year school, they are doing the Johnson & Johnson one and done shot. So Johnson & Johnson is really making its way into the mainstream now. So we've got the big three, which would be, you know, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, kind of slash Merck. They've joined forces to distribute, to manufacture and distribute. Two competitors, which you rarely ever see in the in the health field, working together, which is great. My workout partner works for, funny, he works for Merck Chemical. He's a pharmaceutical salesman, and he was having trouble getting his shot. And I said, can't you just walk into your office and take one off the shelf? But he ended up going over to the local community college over here and getting one himself. But those are the main three. But, you know, the funny thing is, they say now that pregnant women can get the vaccination, and that it actually will, if they take it, the antibodies will go into the fetus and provide the fetus with antibodies, which is good. But my daughter, who is 2 weeks away from giving birth to our fifth grandchild and our third grandson, is very hesitant about doing it until after the baby's born. And at this point, I can't really blame her. I mean, and my son-in-law, they're both staying indoors. We're on 2 week countdown now, so they'll do
it. Exciting. Now, of course, in the UK, Jackie would be knitting maternity blankets and nipples.
As we speak, that's what she's doing.
Oh, fantastic.
As we speak. But you see, the biggest blowback to the vaccination, believe it or not, what would you think the biggest blowback to the vaccination in this country? What do you think it would be?
The biggest blowback? Not having enough of it.
Nope.
not being able to get it to the Midwest states, which are okay.
Nope.
You're teasing me, and it's obviously going to be something
way off the mark, my friend.
You can't get any syringes. You've run out of syringes or needles.
We can't get Republicans to get the vaccine. How do you think? What do you think of that? More Republicans are not doing the vaccine.
No, you're kidding.
Florida has opened up. It's spring break. College students are flocking en masse to Florida. They're not getting their vaccines. The health officials are worried that these new strains that could rear its ugly head, and this thing could come roaring back despite everybody getting vaccinated. Four Republican senators have not gotten vaccinated, which is polls are showing that, you know, it's mainly everybody but Republicans. They're the most hesitant to get this vaccine for whatever reason. You know, maybe the message isn't out there that Trump got secretly vaccinated before he left office and never mentioned it. It came out just in the press just recently. And so I think that his base of followers are still, you know, if Trump didn't do it, we're not doing it. And that's the mentality. And it's a shame that you know, the message is getting out there. The most vulnerable groups are the vaccine is finding its way to hard to reach areas, to vulnerable groups, the Latinos and blacks and others. But Republicans are refusing or are most hesitant about getting the vaccine. And that is the biggest, that's one of the biggest issues with the vaccination process in this country. Even getting a vaccine has become politicized and polarized.
Let's look at some of the issues away from the vaccine. And you've muttered the word that now President Biden is having trouble with that darned border between you and Mexico. What's going on there?
Well, the border crisis, you know, is acting up, and Republicans are seizing on it and saying this is what happens when you don't have strong borders and you're not holding the fort and you're turning people away. And all of a sudden, we've got crisis at the border. But the crisis at the border this time around is more a byproduct of Trump's policies and what Biden was inherited with in trying to figure out, you know, how to deal with immigration reform. Immigration reform has been a problem in this country for years, and no president has really been able to tackle it. And so Biden will probably try to tackle it. I don't know how much luck he will have. But this crisis down here is a little bit different. Remember, Trump was talking about caravans of immigrants coming to the border, and they were going to come into the country, and they were going to cause all sorts of havoc. You know, it was right before the 2018 midterms, you know, and it never happened, right?
Yep, I remember it well.
It never happened. And then the biggest crisis that they had was that all these families came into the border, and Trump's administration separated parents from their kids. And in fact, there's still hundreds of kids who still haven't found their parents, and they were put in such horrible conditions. They were, you know, put in cages, living on cold cement floors, not being provided just the basic amenities for survival and of life. And now we've got another crisis brewing. Nancy Pelosi's called it a crisis at the border. Biden's administration hasn't yet labeled it that, but they have sent FEMA down there to investigate what's going on and to kind of try to help handle the situation. But it's kids, it's unaccompanied children and teens that are coming to the border looking for a better life. And they're coming en masse. And they're trying to provide newer, cleaner living conditions. But the fact is that there's more down there than they can handle. And so the Republicans have seized on this, and they're blaming Biden for the crisis at the border now, and it's all his fault, and they're trying to tout what Trump had done was a much stronger border policy. And so Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, he and 12 other Republicans went down to the border in Texas, and you know, with a number of, you know, supporters down there, and used the media to say, see, we told you so, and this is what happens with Biden's liberal policies and blah 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 blah. And again, instead of trying to be the solution to the problem, they continue to just, you know, pour more fuel on the fire. And I would love to see Joe Biden just, you know, try to handle it. And I would love to see him invite these people and say, look, if you've got a better idea on what to do down there and a better humanitarian idea, then come here and let's talk about it and let's figure it out. But that doesn't, you know, that kind of goes by the wayside, and every opportunity now that Republicans can use to kind of derail what Biden's trying to do is seems to be the agenda. And it's not a surprise. I mean, it seems like it's all just, you know, it's like the tables have turned, you know, you guys did this to Trump. And so, you know, now it's your turn to, you know, to get it from all of us. And it's and again, you know, it's, you know, we talk about unity and we talk about bringing the country together under everybody's, you know, an American. But the red state, blue state divide in this country is still there. It's going to be here for a while. It's going to want to go away.
And leading on from that, I think you were saying there's a huge number of states, Republican states, are trying to change voting rights to make it more difficult, particularly for black voters to register and to get voting ahead, I assume, of the midterms in a couple of years' time. Could you just fill us in on where that's got to?
There's over 40 states, I think, you know, close, maybe even, you know, almost over 43 from what I heard.
That's a huge number.
Republican legislatures are passing legislation to change the way states administer their elections. And it's becoming, rather than finding ways to make it easier and freer for everybody to vote, which is what this country's all about, everybody having a voice and being able to vote, they're doing their best to restrict voting. They're saying, well, it's largely for financial reasons and to make things more streamlined and efficient. But when you want to shorten the windows for early voting, when you want to curtail voting by mail, when you want to not allow people to be able to provide food to people waiting in voting lines, when you want to, you know, shorten the number of hours of the day that people can vote in person, when you want to limit the number of days a week that people can go and vote early, you know, you're hurting people who tend to do that. And the people that tend to vote early, the people that tend to come out on weekends, the people that tend to wait online the longest are generally people of color coming from the major urban markets in this country, the Detroits, the Philadelphias, the Atlantas, you know, in some of these, you know, some of these states. And so it's really very flagrant voter suppression that's taking place and not free and fair streamlining and efficiency in the voting process. And that's a problem because the Republicans feel, I guess, the only way they can win is to hurt the people that vote for their opponents, which are people of color. And so, you know, there's, you know, I have a feeling that a lot of these things that are happening will end up in court. They may even end up in the Supreme Court, but we have a new Attorney General, Merrick Garland, who just got confirmed by the Senate. So, you know, he'll be looking at a lot of cases around the country where, you know, and taking some of these cases, you know, potentially to the Supreme Court for ruling to see if they're constitutional or not. But, you know, we have activists like Stacey Abrams who led the charge to get the African American vote out. And really helped get turn Georgia blue and get two Democratic senators elected there, and who helped turn out the vote in a lot of these major urban markets around the country that were able to come back and win back, you know, a Democratic president in states that Trump had won, beat Hillary Clinton, like the Michigans, the Wisconsins, the Pennsylvanias, you know, the African American vote. In Georgia, and the African American vote in those places really made the difference in winning the presidency for the Democrats. So, you know, so that battle's being fought. And then you have another issue that's happening. You've got governors who were once looked upon as being the gold standard are now under fire in many states for just making wrong decisions. But in New York, you've not only got Governor Cuomo, who's under fire, who was the darling of the Democratic Party, who was even talked about as a presidential contender, has now only, you know, cooked the books, as they're saying in New York, and he's under investigation for how he reported deaths, COVID deaths, whether they were from nursing homes or in the hospitals. You know, the way that they calculated where the deaths occurred, early on made him look great. But now they're finding that they were kind of cooking the books a little bit, and deaths that didn't go to nursing homes should have gone to nursing homes, which would have made New York look pretty bad. So he's under investigation for that. And then on top of that, six or seven women have come forward saying that he sexually assaulted them while they were working for him. So he's being called upon by every Democrat to resign. He's refusing. He said the people have elected him to do his job, and he's not resigning. But Biden has gone on record saying, look, there's an investigation being done by the Attorney General in New York. Let's see how that plays out. And then we'll go from there. So, but he's under fire. Every New York legislator, every congressman, senator in New York has come out and urged him to resign, but he's not. So that's happening. In California, our Governor Newsom is now in a recall battle. There's enough signatures that were garnered on petitions to create a special election to recall him. And it seems like it's just a Republican ploy. Mm-hmm. And the timing is strange because the recall election probably will not be until November. And then there's going to be another election right in November. Why they want to have a recall election before a midterm election is beyond most people.
But is it, again, going back to what you were saying earlier, a bit of mischief-making? Republicans said, you attacked our guy while he was in, so we're going to take a punt at you now that you're in.
Yeah, and it's Republicans attacking a liberal Democrat, which is not unusual. And they're saying that, they don't like, how he locked down the state. And they don't like, everything they can do to come up with an excuse to recall him they've come up with. They said that, he didn't even heed his own warnings. He was seen in a restaurant or at an event without wearing masks and not socially distancing. And they don't like, how he's spending money in the state. And it's just mischief making, but they've got enough signatures to do it. And so now he'll probably face recall. But the last time a recall happened to a California governor was Gray Davis. And he ended up in a recall battle and lost to Arnold Schwarzenegger,
uh-huh.
who became our governor.
Goodness.
And Gray Davis is, but he's gone on to become a very successful activist. And he and Arnold Schwarzenegger are very good friends now, believe it or not.
And as they say, there always can be a silver lining to black clouds, can't there?
Politics makes strange bedfellows. But this, again, this situation in California is different. Newsom is very popular among Democrats. The Democrats California is probably a 65-35 Democratic state. So it seems like this is going to be an effort and futility and a waste of a lot of money.
Yeah.
Newsom should survive this one. He's not as disliked as Gray Davis was. He's actually very likable. He's got good strong Democratic support. So this one probably, won't change things, but it's just going to waste a lot of people's time and money.
Wasting time and money, and it'd be a nuisance. And amidst all of this that's going on, President Trump came out to address the conference a couple of weeks ago, but he's not been making the headlines, certainly not this side of the Atlantic. Is he playing golf down at Mar-a-Lago?
Well, he's playing a lot of golf. They're saying that they say that he looks really terrible, that there's something definitely not right with him physically. We know there's nothing right with him mentally, but physically too. And he's only wandered out of Florida one time. And that is, to do that CPAC speech, which was loaded with lies and spewing the
same old
stuff. And, and after you hear 4 years of that, it's no wonder that these legislatures are, they've all bought into this stuff. You hear that lie, of time you start to believe it. People mm-hmm. think there's actually something wrong, even though nothing was found fraudulent or wrong with any of the elections in any state. Every lawsuit was thrown out or dismissed, even up to the Supreme Court. But I can't imagine he will be back in 2024. I just can't. And from what I understand, the New York, Cyrus Vance in New York has got all of Trump's financial records, and they're getting ready to close in on him, and they may have to extradite him to New York to face charges for, you know, his Trump organization, the taxes and money laundering and whatever else is going on there. And he's looking for allies who will help fight extradition if it happens. One of the reasons he moved to Florida is because he knew eventually this was going to catch up with him. And he has an ally in Governor DeSantis down there in Florida, who's a huge Trump lackey and and who could stand in the way of extraditing Trump to New York should charges be filed and they need him to, to account for what was going on there. So things will get interesting. In Florida, if he does get charged and if they do need him to go to New York, we'll see how difficult that will be to get him there. So that's one of the reasons he moved there, where he had an ally. And then also the other thing is that they're also saying that Trump put a lot of these women up to this, because if they could get, Cuomo out of the picture in New York, that could make things a little easier for Trump as well.
Well, we'll have to see how that one works out. I did promise you some good news. We're looking at the time. We're coming towards the end of our time together today. You're a staunch royalist. I know you're eagerly awaiting the news from hospital. Well, I can tell you that the Duke of Edinburgh earlier today, reminder, we're recording this 20 minutes past. No, it's 20 minutes to three on the 16th, Tuesday, the 16th. He is home from hospital. The prince was sitting in the back of a rather nice car, being taken back to the Queen, who's at Windsor. So it looks like he's been in hospital for a month. I think that's probably the longest he's ever been in hospital. And we're all thinking, crumbs, is he, you know, how are things going to go? But it looks like whatever he had done, he had a little heart procedure because they transferred him to another hospital and then brought him back for recuperation to where he started from. He seems to be fine. So I'm sure that's great news in the Rosenblum household.
It is very good news. You know, what a long and wonderful life this gentleman has had. The royal couple, I guess, the Queen and the Prince it's something we'll never again see it in our lifetime.
No.
A 100-year, reign, close to 100-year reign, of a personality like the Queen. I mean, say what you will about her, but, just looking back on her life, what a tremendous, tremendous life that she's had. I mean, the ups and the downs and what she has meant to the country and what she, what she saw and what she experienced. During world wars and pandemics and just, it's unbelievable. You can't in your wildest imagination script a storyline like her life story.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I just hope, like we talked about this, many months ago on the show, that we thought that the royal family had really kind of moved forward in a lot of ways, and particularly by William and Harry. Remember we talked about that?
We did indeed, yes.
And it's just, it was really great to see these young people kind of taking social causes on and really doing good for the world and getting out there and traveling and trying to bring, some sense of positive and good to the countries they were visiting and the causes they were fighting for. And now to see, these kind of roadblocks which they've hit, these hurdles that they're now having to, kind of maneuver around, it does make me sad in a way. It does. It does impact our household because we see the news and we see what's going on and we feel bad. We feel bad that these kind of things, have happened and have hit hit this family. And I hope, I just hope and pray that they can, they can resolve their issues, as families, as families should. I think they're right. It should be resolved within the family. I hope that they can come up with some some solutions. I hope they get the brothers back together. You know, brother, again, we talked about, you know, rich man, poor man, you know, we don't need that. We don't, you know, we don't, it's hard to see two brothers, you know, go down different paths, you know, and not have at least, you know, some connection. You know, it's fine to go down different paths. Everybody in a family does that. But you want to still see the connection there. You want to still see the love, and you want, still want to see them, you know, when they're needed to come together and join forces and be as stronger as a pair of brothers rather than individuals going down, you know, their own separate ways. So, I hope the family resolves. I hope things work out, you know, and, you know, I want to feel good about the monarchy and the queen and all that. It's, I mean, it's still, it is romantic. It is, you know, something that we'll all never have and we live vicariously through. So I hope it ends up, I hope everything works out.
But what a great way to finish today's program. Just a reminder, again, if anything changes, we've been talking around about 2 till 2:45 here on Sirem Radio on Tuesday the 16th. Bruce K. Rosenbloom, thank you so much indeed for being with us. Will you join us again this time next week?
I plan on it. As long as you'll have me, I'll be here for you any time, Andrew. You know that.
Thanks so much indeed to Bruce K. Rosenbloom joining us here on Sirem Radio.